So good afternoon. Today is July 28th, 2015, and we are here with Professor Isabel Grant to talk about her career, her life, and her tenure here at UBC. So welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so why don't we start with the very beginning? Can you tell us about your background?
Well, I was born in England, a small place called Blackheath, which is in southeast London. But I grew up in a town called Dundas, which is just outside of Hamilton in Ontario. My dad taught at McMaster University, so we lived in Dundas.
Okay, and did you go to school there as well?
I went to elementary school and high school in Dundas, and then I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Toronto, although I spent 1 year at McMaster.
Okay, and what did you study in Toronto?
I studied psychology. At that time, I thought I wanted to be a forensic psychologist or a neuropsychologist, which seems strange to me now, but that was my plan.
Okay, and why psychology in particular?
I had worked for a professor of psychology at McMaster analyzing data and running experiments, and I had really enjoyed that. But I think it was also partly at that time we weren't exposed to a lot of the other subject areas, so I just tried out a number of subjects in my first year, and psychology was really the one that I was very interested in. So it was almost by accident that I ended up in psychology.
Okay, and what happened then? What happened when you finished your psychology degree?
Well, at the end of my degree, in the last couple of years, I took a few courses in criminology at the criminology department at the University of Toronto. One of them was a criminal law course with a professor named Graham Parker, who for many years taught at Osgoode Hall Law School, and this was just an undergraduate course that he taught on the side. He was a great teacher, and I was fascinated by the case method by which he taught the course, mm-hmm. and it was the first time I'd ever encountered that. And I was also really interested in the substance of criminal law. And then in my final year at university, I took a couple of courses in the philosophy of law. So I took one on just generally the philosophy of law, and then one that dealt specifically with punishment. So over these couple of years, I developed a real interest in criminal law, and I was debating between a PhD in psychology and going to law school. And I ultimately chose law school. And I went to law school specifically for the purpose of studying criminal law, although when I got there, I found that I was interested in a number of other areas as well.
Okay, so did the criminal law remain your main interest, or did you diversify?
Yes, no, it did. I think I took just about every criminal law course that Dalhousie offered.
Okay, so can you tell us what were some of your first impressions of the law school?
I think like most first-year students, I found the beginning quite daunting. One tends to have that sense that all the other students know what's going on and they know what they're talking about, and you're the only one who doesn't really know what's going on. But at the same time, I was absolutely fascinated by every one of my courses, even courses that I thought I would have no interest in. For example, property. I really enjoyed first-year property law. And I guess after a few months, I realized that really none of us knew what we were talking about at that point, so it wasn't just me, and that I was doing just fine, so I started to feel more comfortable by late in the first term. And I had some really amazing teachers at Dalhousie, and it was a small law school at that time, and you really got a chance to know your teachers and to go to social events with your teachers. So I felt very fortunate to have the kind of education that I did at Dalhousie. I've been to four different universities in my life, and I would say I got the best education at Dalhousie than all the other schools I went to.
So what was your law school curriculum like? What kind of courses you actually took?
The first year program wasn't that different from our current program. I think what it lacked probably in modern terms was an international perspective that UBC now has with transnational. We had the usual typical courses, property, torts, criminal, contracts. We had a course that I really enjoyed called Legal Process, which was really just an introduction to the roles of the different participants in the legal system. And then we did family law in first year as well back then, and of course legal writing. We didn't do constitutional law in first year as we do at UBC. We did that in second year, which was probably a good thing for me because I started law school the year that the charter came into force. And so by the time I got to constitutional law, we actually had some cases to study on the charter, whereas if I'd done it on first year, we really wouldn't have had any. I took a very broad range of courses. As I mentioned earlier, I took every criminal law course there was. But other than that, I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. So I took, you know, the basic courses from corporations and tax to wills and estates. So I had a fairly broad-based education at Dalhousie. I think the course I enjoyed the most of all my courses at law school was actually administrative law. I had a wonderful professor, man from New Zealand named Stephen Mills, who was a bit intimidating in the classroom because he really expected a lot from his students, but he also gave a lot in return. And I think administrative law was the course that probably had the greatest influence on shaping my desire to go into academics. It was the first course that really challenged me to think about the role of law in society and the role of the different legal participants in the system. So strangely, I've never written anything in administrative law or taught the subject, but it really had a very significant influence on me at Dalhousie.
So after Dalhousie came Yale.
Can you tell us about that? When I was in third year at Dal, I was fortunate to get a Supreme Court of Canada clerkship, but it wasn't for the year right after law school, it was for 2 years after law school. It was the transition year when they were switching from interviewing 1 year apart, 1 year before the clerkship to 2 years before the clerkship. So I had this year, but I wasn't sure what I was gonna do. I talked to a number of my professors and got the suggestion and the advice that seemed like good advice at the time to, rather than to article in Halifax at that time, to do a master's degree. So I applied to a number of schools in the U.S. and I ended up going to Yale.
And how was that experience?
Yale was great. I enjoyed Yale. It was a much bigger law school than I had been at, and the program at Yale was very much course-based. We did a thesis-type paper with one person with whom we worked closely, and I enjoyed that part of it. But other than that, you were very much in big classes with undergraduate and graduate law students. So while I was fascinated by what I was learning about American law, I don't feel the same sort of connection and loyalty to Yale that I feel to Dalhousie.
And then you end up with the Supreme Court of Canada.
And then I went to the Supreme Court of Canada in 1986-87.
And
I clerked with Mr. Justice Estey at the Supreme Court of Canada. And that was a fantastic year. I'd never been so challenged intellectually as I was that year. And I worked with an amazing group of clerks. We became very close. One of them, for example, was my current colleague, Bruce McDougall. We were close friends, both clerking the same year. Former Professor Rob Grant, who used to teach at UBC, was also a clerk that year, and former Professor Nithya Iyer. So I made lifelong friends that year clerking. I mean, many people with whom I'm still in touch, and it was a great year. Justice Estey was an interesting judge to clerk for. He had a reputation of somewhat having a temper, but he was always, I thought he was always very nice and very respectful to me. And I really, that year, I can't stress enough what a great experience that was. And I work hard to encourage as many students now as I can to try and clerk, because it's just an unparalleled, gives you an unparalleled insight into the justice system that you can't really get in any other way.
Great. So how did you get affiliated with UBC in 1987?
Well, it was very much sort of an accident in a way. It was actually when I was at Yale. So UBC hired me 2 years in advance because I had the clerkship lined up for the following year. And what happened is that David Cohen, who is a former colleague of ours, whose name you'll probably come across from a number of people doing these interviews, and Dennis Pavlich, who is still one of our colleagues, came down to Yale to interview potential graduate students looking for people they might want to hire. And I actually did not sign up for the interview because I knew I had a job lined up for the next year, and I knew I would not give that opportunity up. So I did a couple of interviews, but I hadn't really taken seriously the possibility of coming to Vancouver. I thought I would end up probably going back to Halifax after clerking. But what happened at the last minute is one of my friends in the program who had signed up to interview with David and Dennis dropped out of the interview. And I got a last minute call from our associate dean at Yale saying, could you please interview with UBC? They're coming all this way from New York and we have no one to meet with them. And could you please just interview them? I know you're not thinking about going there, but please just do the interview. So I guess in a way that allowed me to do the interview with absolutely no pressure. And I had a really good talk with David and Dennis. It turned out that David had both been to Yale and had clerked for Justice Estes, so we immediately had a lot in common. And Dennis was very much focused on recruiting people to come to UBC. David was more interested in talking about our similar shared past experiences. And so after that, they invited me to come to Vancouver for an interview and to do a job talk. And it's hard to come to Vancouver. It was the first time I'd been here. It's hard to come to Vancouver and not be awed by the beauty of the place. And I really liked the people I met at UBC. I met some really exciting and interesting colleagues. And to my surprise, they made an offer to me 4 or 2 years in advance because they knew I was clerking the next year. And I don't know if any other school would have been willing to do that. But the dean at the time, Peter Burns, when he wanted to hire someone, he did whatever was necessary to hire that person. And he was very flexible about that and then gave me an offer that would start 2 years later. So that's how I got here.
Great. So can you tell us a little bit about what was different between UBC Law then in 1987 and now in 2015? How would you describe the difference?
I guess the two things that come to mind initially are the building, which was, of course, the old building, which was really somewhat archaic even back then. I remember, for example, students using wheelchairs sometimes had to phone the professor they wanted to meet with and tell them to come downstairs before we had an elevator in the building. So the building is one of the things that really stands out. But the other thing that stands out in my mind is that the faculty was much smaller then. So the type of collegiality that's possible in a really small faculty, I think is somewhat different than in a larger faculty where you tend to have sort of groups of colleagues who work in the same area who tend to, you know, work together and teach similar courses and end up socializing together. Just to add one more significant difference that probably was one of the most notable things is that I was one of four women when I was hired at UBC. There were only three other women on the faculty, two of whom are still with us at the faculty, Liz Edinger and then honorary professor Lynn Smith. So it was a very small group of women, although I have to say it wasn't an environment that was unfriendly to women in any sort of way. It was very much sort of my vision of what old school academics was like back then. Senior colleagues would invite you for dinner and welcome you to Vancouver and be very supportive. So it was actually a really friendly, warm, welcoming environment, even though it was one with only four women, including myself.
And what about the law curriculum itself?
The curriculum has gone through so many changes since I've been here, and I think the majority of them have focused on how to give students broader perspectives through and lenses through which to examine law. So we've had different courses. We had the perspectives course. We had a number of different courses in first year trying to introduce students to different perspectives. We now have the mandatory jurisprudence course, which in a sense serves some of the same purposes. We had, I would say, less of an international focus. There was nothing in first year that gave students really much exposure to the international or global nature of law, because that was just much less significant than it is now. We taught roughly the same number of courses, although those of us who taught in first year also had to teach a separate small proportion of our big first year class. We taught as a legal writing class. And we met with those students separately and worked on a number of assignments with those students. And I still remember some of the students from my first year legal writing group, and I'm still in contact with some of them because you form very close bonds in that context. I also, at the time, so I was teaching in my first year, I taught criminal law and family law, which was an upper year course. And I remember being so struck by how different it was to teach a first year course and to teach an upper year course. I was much more comfortable teaching criminal law because it's something I'd worked on a lot as a LLB student back then and as a graduate student. And fortunately at the Supreme Court, I would say the majority of cases I worked on were all in the area of criminal law. But it was the difference in the students really surprised me, how much the first years were eager and enthusiastic and how quiet the second year and third year students were in the classroom. But so we had a reduced teaching load in first year, so the same as we do now. And then I moved on in later years to add either the charter course, which I taught for a number of years, which was then a second year course, and I sometimes did various seminars either in criminal law or in mental health law. So the curriculum was similar, but the two areas that I've seen the most change in over the year are how we administer the legal research and writing component of our program. When I came, that was done by professors, full-time faculty members who were teaching a substantive course, and then would break off with maybe 20 of their students and teach them legal writing. And the way we've handled perspectives, different perspectives and about law. We've also seen much more focus on Indigenous legal studies throughout the years, although that was still a very important part of the program back then, but we didn't have anything in the first year curriculum that specifically dealt with that.
So how would you compare the workload between 1987 and today overall in law school?
I think I would say that the teaching was virtually the same. So the normal load was four courses after your first year, during which you had a reduction, although we had the legal writing group on top of that, so it was arguably slightly heavier. The major difference, I think, is in the research expectations. Back then, it was commonly assumed that if you published one article a year, that was sufficient, one significant, substantial article a year. And so the norm would be that you would focus on teaching, especially in the early years of your career, during the school year, and then you would work full-time on writing during the summer. It was a time when the university itself, not so much just the law faculty, but the university itself, was much less focused on research output and how one measures and quantifies research output. You know, there was no counting of citations or things like that back in those days. So I would say the research component of the job has somewhat less pressure. There was also more money to support research, more money within the law school to support research, which made, you know, hiring research assistants much easier and getting that kind of support. And so that was the part of the job that's the most different. In terms of service commitments, I would say there were fewer committees then than there are now, but they were still quite a significant time commitment. I started out on the appointments committee when I came and stayed on appointments for a number of years, which is always a very work-intensive committee, so I wouldn't say that there's been a huge difference in the service commitments. I also started my first year with the Gail Moot program with a colleague, David Cohen, who I mentioned earlier, so I got involved in doing the Moot during my first year as well.
So over the last 18 years, what became your own main area of expertise, so to speak, with the law school?
Well, I've been here for a long time now, so I would say my areas of expertise have shifted and developed and evolved, but they have still stayed the same in the sense that criminal law is sort of the big label that I would use to describe the majority of my research. And in the earlier years of my career, I focused a lot on the crime of homicide and specifically murder. I wrote a book with Christine Boyle and a colleague from Simon Fraser, Dorothy Chun, on the law of homicide, and I wrote a number of papers. My thesis at Yale has been a comparative paper looking at felony murder in the United States and comparing it to constructive murder and what would happen in the courts under the charter for constructive murder in Canada. Later on in my career, I would say my interests have shifted more to the impact of crime on women, and women both as perpetrators of crime, but more commonly as victims of violence. So I've written a number of papers on sexual assault with Janine Benedet, and papers on intimate partner criminal harassment. And then the final area that I think I've really become interested in over the last decade has been the criminalization of people with HIV in Canada, and how Canada has taken a particularly harsh approach to prosecuting people who do not disclose their HIV status to their sexual partners. And I've written 3 or 4 papers on that, and I've become involved with the HIV/AIDS Legal Network in Toronto, working on a number of cases, interventions in the Ontario Court of Appeal and in the Supreme Court of Canada on that subject. So my research has always focused on criminal law. I've written a few papers in the area of mental health law, but they often have a criminal law dimension, but I've shifted through different areas of criminal law throughout my career.
Great. So, looking back, can you describe any notable colleagues you have had that you would like to share about?
I guess the question is, are there any not notable colleagues? I mean, I've had a number of colleagues that were very notable, and who comes to mind? I guess David Cohen comes to mind. David was the person who interviewed me and then was a very close colleague. We ended up even teaching family law together one year. He went off to be dean at the University of Victoria and then followed that by being dean at Pace Law School in the United States. He was very much a maverick in the early days at the law school, very committed to increasing the number of women at the law school, very committed to broadening the nature of the legal education that we provided to students and developing courses like Perspectives on Law that hadn't been in existence when I first came to the university. A number of my notable colleagues are still with us. Lynn Smith, who I mentioned earlier. Lynn was really a mentor to me when I first came to UBC. She had been integral in developing the Legal Education and Action Fund, what is known as LEAF, and Lynn got me involved in that and immediately introduced me to a lot of feminist lawyers in Vancouver and across the country. So I feel a real debt of gratitude to Lynn Smith. The person who had his office across the hall from me was a colleague named Chris Thomas, who had been very active in negotiating the free trade agreement and ultimately left the faculty to go back to practice. And I have to say I've lost touch with him, but he might be someone that would be interesting to interview as well.
Mm-hmm. And what about any memorable students or lawyers you have taught or mentored over the
years? There's a really long list of amazing students. That's been probably the highlight of my career, many of whom have gone on to be friends and even colleagues at other law schools and at this law school. I guess the person that comes to mind first is Janine Benedet, now our associate dean. Janine did the Gail Moot under my supervision twice while she was a student at UBC, and she did a directed studies with me that I can still remember. She was an extraordinary student who you knew when you worked with Janine that she was going to go on and do great things, both in the legal profession and now we know ultimately as an academic. Catherine DeVerne, our dean, was a student, although I never had the pleasure of teaching Catherine. I got to know her quite well while she was a student, and we kept in touch while she was off clerking in Ottawa and later when she did graduate work in Australia. I can remember a year where there were three students, Tim Brooks, Deborah Parks, and Jillian Calder. All three of them, they were inseparable best friends, and they've all three gone on to great academic careers. Tim was dean of Dalhousie Law School. Deborah, who was also my research assistant as well as a student in my courses, is the associate dean at the University of Manitoba Faculty of Law. And Jillian Calder ended up at the University of Victoria teaching. So we've had a number of students go on to academic careers, which is always particularly satisfying. A couple of other people who come to mind, Mary Ainsley, who's senior Crown Counsel and QC in Vancouver, who's given back so much to the law school, who's taught here, who's supervised the MOOCs, who's been involved in a wide range of things. I remember her both as a student in my charter class and a student on my Gail Moot team. Emily McKinnon, who was a former gold medalist at UBC and went on to clerk for the Chief Justice of Canada, is another person who stands out in my mind. She was also my research assistant for her last 2 years and really had a great influence on my work and someone who I've kept in close touch with. Another one is Lisa Martz. Lisa was a student around the same time as Mary in the early 1990s, another student who did the Gail Moot and who's gone on to a very successful legal career. And I think I mentioned to you earlier, Tamara Hunter, I mentioned to you that I had kept in touch with students in my first legal writing class back in 1987. And Tamara Hunter, who's a successful lawyer at Davis & Co., is one of the people who was in that first legal writing program. It's really difficult to narrow down the list. There's just so many. The students you get to know the best are the ones who either have done a MOOT with you or who have been in more than one of your courses. But there really is a very long list. Efrat Arbel, one of our new colleagues, was a research assistant of mine. So the list really is a long one. I've had the pleasure of getting to know so many great students in my 25 years here.
So what's in store next for you?
I'm involved in a number of things. Right now, I'm going to be co-director of the Center for Feminist Legal Studies this year with Janine Benedet, a former student who I mentioned in my earlier answer. And I'm looking forward to that and working with the center. And hopefully I'm going to be involved in the hiring of a new chair in feminist legal studies, because one of the things that's happened to the faculty in recent years is that we've had a number of retirements of some of our senior feminist colleagues like Susan Boyd, Claire Young, and Christine Boyle. And then we lost Kim Brooks to the Dalhousie Dean process. So in my role as co-secretary of the appointments committee this year, I'm very much hoping that we will be bringing in some exciting candidates to interview for that job, as well as other positions. I'm involved in a number of research programs right now. I'm working with Janine Benedet on developing an SSHRC application. We are currently writing a paper on sexual violence against older women but our SSHRC application looks at sexual violence at three different stages of the lifespan for women and looks at some of the barriers to successful prosecution at each of those stages. Adolescence for spousal sexual assaults or intimate partner sexual assaults, and then finally for older women. So we're developing that right now, putting that together. I'm also working on a paper with another former student that I mentioned earlier, Deborah Parks, who's the Associate Dean of Research at the University of Manitoba. I'm working on a paper with her on trying to determine whether the defense of provocation in criminal law can be reconciled with principles of equality, particularly in the context of gender and sexual orientation. So I'm involved in a number of different projects, and I'm excited to work and support our new dean, Catherine DeVerne, who I know is going to be making some changes to the law school, and I'm really looking forward to the appointments process this year and to hopefully bringing in some new junior colleagues to energize and continue the tradition at Allard.
Great. And my very last question, do you have any advice for people who would like to study law and get involved with the UBC Law School?
I think that students coming to law school should really think about whether they want to study law. I think that may sound like a very obvious point to make, but in my sense now is that employment opportunities for bright, successful young students are much more difficult than when I was a student. When I was a student, you could just get jobs after university. They were readily available. It wasn't hard. You could always find a job that paid reasonably well. That's just not possible for law students and for all students today. So I guess I'm concerned that students not come to law school unless they really want to study law, and that they don't come to law school just because they know that their BA is not adequate to get them a job these days. Having said that, I also think that the education I have received in law over the very number of years was the best and most enriching part of my life, both studying law as an LLB student and as an LLM student at Yale. And I got a better education about the world studying law than I did in any of my earlier studies. So I think it's a wonderful area of study, and I encourage students who are excited about that to think about law school. It's also a huge commitment in terms of time, energy, money, and so I guess I just encourage students to think really hard about whether that excites them. And if it does, to just keep working on what they need to do to get into law school, because I do think it's a wonderful education. I don't say that you have to know you want to be a lawyer to come to law school. I don't believe that is the case. But I think students should be excited about learning about the law if they want to come to law school. And if it doesn't excite them, I don't think it's the right career for them.
Great. Well, on that note, thank you for your time. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you.